Well, welcome back, listeners, for another episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Today in the studio, I've got joining me Matt Watson. Now, Matt is the founder and CEO of Stackify. He has been a developer and hacker for over 15 years and loves solving hard problems with code. He sold his first startup, Vin Solutions, for $150 million and started Stackify to solve the biggest challenge he had while he was the CTO of Vin Solutions. Matt is skilled at SEO, blogging, and content marketing. In addition, Stackify receives 100,000 monthly visits as a result of Matt's successful content marketing. So I'm sure we've got lots to learn from Matt. So I'd like to welcome Matt to the Real Marketing Real Fast podcast today.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be here.
Hey, it's going really well. It's going to go a lot better because you're going to share your superpower and how you successfully started a company and sold it for $150 million. I'm sure that there's a lot of people that would love to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just hard work and timing and a little luck. I mean, I don't know. There's too many super secrets to it.
Well, hard work always comes in there. I think people are surprised that you really got to get in there and grind and work hard to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why don't you share with us, what Stackify is and what Vin Solutions was. So just get a little context of your background and what sort of coding and work you do.
Yeah, So Vin Solutions started when I was 22 years old. So I was actually the technical co-founder that somebody else was looking for. Somebody else who had a business idea was going around looking for somebody who could help write the code, and a mutual friend connected us. So I was actually just the random technical co-founder. But I was the guy who said, you know what, I can do this. I'll figure out how to do it. And literally sat down in Applebee's with a guy and said, sure, let's do this. Let's figure it out. And it just started a business. It was all kind of by chance, actually. I think there's a lot of people out there that are looking for a technical co-founder because they have some business idea. And I was the lucky technical co-founder that day, I think, that was able to make it work. But so that business all started out with a simple idea of how to take pictures of cars and upload them to the internet for car dealers. So at that time, this was in 2003, this was 3 years before the iPhone came out. Digital cameras were still very much a luxury item, and they were terrible. It was very labor intensive to take photos of cars and upload them to the internet. And so that's where it started. And then it grew into a giant company that did CRM software for car dealers. So basically tracked all the interaction that a person had with the dealership and would send them emails, and the salespeople used it to track their phone calls and follow up and all sorts of different stuff. Kind of grew into a big sales and marketing tool.
So then what was the problem that Stackify came along to solve the big challenge it said that you had?
Yeah. So at Vin Solutions, we were a very high growth company. You know, I went from having five software developers to 2 years later having 40 software developers. And we had every challenge you could imagine in an IT perspective, from trying to scale the software, the performance of it, bugs, new feature requests, all that stuff, and just didn't have the tools that my team needed to solve those issues. And so the goal when I left was really to build a suite of tools designed for software developers to help them understand how to improve the performance of their applications, how to know if their applications are actually working, all those sort of details that developers need to know. We're sort of Stackify is sort of like the black box of an airplane. We collect a whole bunch of data and then provide a lot of reporting and insights into what in the world is going on and how do we improve this thing.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, having looked through your website, I got the basic idea. Obviously, I'm not a software developer, but I could see, why it makes sense to keep all this in a central place.
Yeah, the easiest analogy probably is if you're ever on a website or you're on a app on your phone and you're getting frustrated because it's really slow or it's getting errors or whatever, tools like ours track when that stuff happens, so we can tell the developers, hey, your customers are on your website now and they're not very happy.
So what are some of the barriers? I mean, is this something that people outside the software development industry would use as a tool to track, user interaction and how their server's performing?
No, not really. Our customer base is really the software development teams. It's across all sizes of companies, all industries. We have customers in like 50 different countries. So we run, you know, across all the, you know, everything there, but it is just software developers.
So as you grew your company, do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, you shared this kind of the growing pains of the staff and that, but how did you guys fund yourself to grow to the next level?
In my original company or my current company?
Either.
Well, so at Vint Solutions, we were all bootstrapped. We never raised any outside capital. We had, our Visas and MasterCards and, a lot of times the founders, executives, you know, we didn't pay ourselves or we paid ourselves late, all those sort of things. But it was bootstrapped. It was a high growth company that had no budgets and had no funding, either one. So we were just a little bit of cowboys just making it work. We didn't really know any different. You know, we had no experience at this. We were just had a business and we were making it work.
Good for you. Well, I hear often people say, well, I can't do this because I don't have enough money. If I could just raise some money. And lots of times I circle back and I'll see the same companies in the same spot two or three years later. And the story's the same. They're still looking for VC money, but they haven't advanced. So what advice do you give people that are saying, hey, I want to move forward, but money's an issue?
You got to find customers, or you got to find people that'll work for sweat equity. You know, at Vint Solutions, there were many times where it's like, hey, payroll is due in 3 days. We're $50,000 short. And, my main business partner, who was the CEO, would get the sales team together and say, hey, you need to call people up, make a deal, do whatever you can. Tell them if they'll overnight you a check, we'll give them a sweetheart deal. Make it happen. We need 50 grand. And you know what? They would do it. They'd make it happen.
I love that. I've never heard anyone be so forward and say that, but I mean, it seems to make sense. Why not sell your product? And if you need to take a thinner margin to make payroll, keep the lights on for the longer term picture, then just do it.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, the bad news for us is we were really growing in like 2008 and 2009. So that was right when the economy kind of hit rock bottom there. And that's also when GM and Chrysler went bankrupt and we were in the automotive space. So it was kind of a bad place to be for raising capital.
Well, I guess you and I share, we share some of those common war wounds because most of my clients were in the financial market.
Okay. Yeah.
So things went a little bit south of them and we managed to just take a different approach like you did. We just sold more stuff.
Yeah. And we were part of our proposition to our customers then was that we could help the car dealers like move to do more online marketing and save them money because we combine multiple kind of tools together. Well, before the big crash, nobody cared about saving money. They were making more money than they know what to do with. And they were still spending a crazy amount of money on marketing in magazines and newspapers and TV and all that stuff, more traditional. But then all of a sudden when the market turned down and they were starting to lose money, they were trying to figure out how to save money. And that really, I think, kind of pushed the online advertising to the forefront. And they stopped spending, you know, $25,000 a month for an ad in the newspaper and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I spend a lot of time talking to people in that space. And I had a friend that owns a car dealership. And I'd say, hey, you know, I feel so bad. I drove by your car lot on the weekend. I see you had a full back page of the newspaper. I see the radio station was there. And you're serving hot dogs. He goes, why didn't you stop by? I said, I felt bad because there's no customers on the lot. I didn't want to get one of those hot dogs you paid for after you spent all the money on advertising and no one showed up.
Yeah, they got the balloons on the car and the bounce house and they're making hot dogs and nobody cares.
Oh, that's so funny. So let's transition a little bit. So looking at your background and bio, it talks about your experience in content marketing and SEO. And obviously, you're a pretty smart guy to be on the coding side, but they don't seem to make sense to me, at least going from coding, which seems to be pretty analytical, into content and SEO. So how do you make that shift and how do you tie that into your, you know, kind of your daily workload?
Well, so I think part of the job of a really good developer or executive or CTO of a company is to also be the product owner. And so, you know, I've long felt like it's my job to know what the product does, how it works, what it's supposed to do, right? And part of that is writing about it. That's a key role for for somebody at any organization, right, is to be that product owner. And if you're a software company, if you make software, if that's what you do, a lot of times that's the CTO a lot of times can be that person. So I've always kind of been the product owner. And so that forces me to do a little bit of writing and be a little bit of a cheerleader of the product and how it's supposed to work.
That's really cool. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, lots of times people say, hey, my product's so good, people will find me, but they won't find you if you're not talking about it.
No, and so this really started for me way back in the Vint Solutions days. I would do a little bit of blogging and try and do some guest posting on industry stuff. And there were 3 or 4 keywords I was trying to rank for. I wanted to rank for automotive CRM. That was like my big goal. And so I would do, you know, kind of different black and white hat SEO sort of stuff, trying to improve our rankings. You know, this was many years ago now. I mean, that was the goal. It was like, how do I get on the first page of Google for this key phrase? And was trying to do different things. As an entrepreneur in a small company back then, you know, I was very involved in our online website and marketing presence. We actually didn't do a lot of marketing at Vint Solutions, which was interesting. It was all cold calling. That was pretty much our entire sales operation. We didn't even do marketing. It was kind of fascinating.
So where do you see that sort of approach? How has it transitioned from where you were then to today?
Well, so my current business, it doesn't work at all. Our customers are software developers. They don't even have phones, or they don't answer phones.
That's fun.
So yeah, that doesn't relate at all. But for car dealers, it's easy, right? You call them up and be like, who's the guy that sells cars? I want to talk to that guy. You get him on the phone every time.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's easy, yeah. Right? But for software developers, it doesn't work that way.
So do you want to walk us through maybe a major success you've had in your business career, or either of these businesses?
Yeah. So on the marketing side with Stackify, the challenge we had is, again, you can't call them. They're also the most likely to use ad blockers in their browser. They're, you know, super finicky about all that sort of stuff and spam. They hate spam. They pretty much hate everybody, but they really hate advertisers.
That's fine.
Right? But they all have one, there's always one universal truth. If they have a problem, they go to Google and they search for it, right? Yep. Everybody does that. So even though they hate ads and all this other stuff, they have a problem, they go to Google and they search for it. So that was really our big kind of shift about a year and a half ago, was to go all in on the content marketing. And, you know, we look at it as like, somebody types something in Google, they're asking a question. If we can answer that question better than anybody else, we will rank, you know, on the top of Google, and it'll drive more traffic to our site. It'll drive trials of our software, all that sort of stuff. And that's really been our big focus for the last year plus.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of insight. I mean, let's unpack that just for a sec. So what listeners, what Matt's talking about is know who your avatar is and know what their behaviors are. Just because you want to run a Facebook ad, if your guys aren't on Facebook, it doesn't matter how good your ad is, you're just not going to generate any sales.
Right. So it's figuring out where your potential customers are. Where do they hang out? How do you reach them?
Well, and knowing their habits, like you said, the tech guys are more likely to block all the stuff that me as an advertiser is going to try to get in front of them. And if I do that, I'm going to annoy them until they have a problem. And then if I can solve their solution, then they'll like me.
Right. Yep.
So moving forward, what are you most excited about, in the marketplace?
Well, our biggest challenge now is we do a great job of getting people kind of in the top of the funnel. We drive now about 600,000 people a month to our website from our content, which is a lot of people.
That's a ton of people. But it's
a ton of people. And so that's up over 10x what it was a year ago. And our challenge now is figuring out, okay, how do we nurture those people? How do we qualify them? How do we pull them through the funnel? That's our biggest challenge.
So how do you get 600,000 people to your site? That's a lot of eyeballs.
Well, we publish new blog posts every single day. Many of them are long tail, but we do have some that drive like 10,000 a month. So you get a few of those. Those are bigger chunks, but a lot of it is long tail stuff.
So you're publishing what, 5 days a week then?
Yep, 5 days a week.
And how long's the average post? How many words?
We shoot for about 1,000 words.
Okay, so yeah, good length. And then you're driving the sales funnel, and what would your typical offer be to get people to sign up or contact you? Like, what are you trying to get them to do on the first contact?
So our goal is to get them to start a trial of our software, install it, and use it. we also have a free tool. So one of the things we decided a couple of years ago when we were trying to figure out how to reach software developers and kind of the challenges of getting traction and awareness with them is we built a free tool. So we have a free product called Prefix, and we built it only as a lead generator. It's completely free. We have about 1,000 people a month that download that through just, at this point, all organic of word of mouth or what have you, or random people that come to our website and end up downloading it. And we, what we did is we took one of the features of our paid product and basically made a free product that just basically uses that one feature. And that's been really successful for us too, from a marketing perspective.
So where do you think the push points are with your potential buyers? Like, where do they push back?
For us, it's, I think, a little bit of timing. It's trying to catch them when they're looking for a tool like ours because they're being very proactive. They're like, hey, we're like, think about healthcare.gov. When it launched, it was a giant disaster. So you get some companies like, hey, we're going to launch this big thing and we need to make sure it goes perfectly. So they're trying to be proactive. And then on the other side, you get people that are being very reactive. They're like, oh, we just launched and it's a disaster. We have all these problems. We don't know what to do. So people come looking for tools like ours. And so our challenge is actually to try and get more customers that are kind of in the middle, that they're not being as proactive. They're not being reactive. They're just kind of day-to-day usage. How do we provide more value to them?
Yes, you want them before their hair is on fire.
Yeah, well, we want to help them keep their hair from getting on fire. Is really the goal. Yeah, fair enough. But their challenge is their hair is always on fire. It's just with something else, right? And a lot of software developers kind of are professional firefighters. They're just running around all day solving problems and putting out fires. And a lot of times they're too busy. Even if we have like a better, you know, water hose, they're too busy to come get the better water hose. That's the challenge.
No, I totally get that. I've been there as well. Lots of times you're so focused on dealing with the problem, you're thinking, I know if I just set aside a little time, I could have a system, or I could delegate, or I could develop a process that would look after this for me. But instead, you just keep dealing with the problems.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way, but I don't have time to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's funny. So looking back in time, what advice would you give yourself or give an entrepreneur that's looking at getting into business or wants to scale their business to the point that you have?
I think finding the right business partners is important. One of the challenges I had in my first business was the business partners that I had. So the original business partner, we actually had to split with and had to buy them out and had a bunch of issues there. Then had new business partners come in, and all of that stuff is really tricky dealing with partners. I think it's really critical to find the right partner. And a friend of mine says all the time, he's like, I think it's easier to get a divorce than it is to split with a business partner. And, you know, that finding the right partner is really tricky, and you want to find somebody who can bring something to the table that you can't. Like, if you're a software developer, the last thing you want is another partner that's also a software developer. You want somebody who's really good at sales or marketing or go-to-market strategies, all that sort of stuff. That part of it's really important. My current business, I don't have a partner. I actually did this all on my own. And some days it would be a lot better if I had a partner. If I had somebody who was in charge of sales and marketing, that would take a huge burden off of me. You know, I'd sleep better at night knowing that I've got somebody I can trust that can run that side of the business.
Sure, fair enough. So what was your biggest marketing failure or assumption you made as you were growing your business?
That if you would build it, they would come. That's definitely the biggest fallacy is, you know, even with Stackify, like version one of the product, we think we're going to go sign up a bunch of customers, but then just don't go anywhere. It's way harder than you think. It takes way more time than you think. It's not easy process.
I love that. I mean, that's so true. I deal with that so often. It's like, hey, I have this great product, and what do you mean for marketing? Oh, people just love it. It's like, yeah, you need to tell people. You need to build the audience and get out there.
Yeah, I feel like one of the key roles that, you know, as a founder or CEO is like, I'm a cheerleader. I'm the, you know, I'm a storyteller. Like my job every day is to go tell everybody what our product does and why they need to use it. And that's like a never ending job from kind of a marketing perspective.
So a question I want to ask you a Tim Ferriss question from one of his latest books. And that is, what's the bad advice that you constantly hear in your business?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I read his book and I thought, wow, everyone always talks, you know, wants to give you advice, but what's the bad advice that if you take, you're going down the wrong path? I mean, my kind of rule of thumb for advice is you never ask anyone for advice that hasn't done what you want to do or is willing to pay the price that you're willing to pay, because they don't have any vested interest and they don't have the experience that you need.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the key things is just, especially when it comes to sales and marketing, is trying everything and trying to be real diligent about customer acquisition costs and all those things and really taking your time. But yeah, I don't know if I have a key, like, bad advice that everybody says all the time.
Well, fair enough. Do you want to share with us a little bit about your application? It said one of the questions, I was looking at your background on bio here, and someone who's always online, and I use 1,000 different tools. And the question says, why does software break all the time? So why doesn't it work?
Well, that's a good question. So the one of the biggest reasons is because it's always changing. So the more things change, the more they break. It's kind of the opposite of stability, right? And we live in if you go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, getting a new version of some software meant somebody mailed you a new CD and you would update the software via CD, right? Well, now we live in this world where everything is web-based, it's a web application, and developers can make changes literally at any moment. And most of the time, they're making changes every week, definitely every month, sometimes every day, sometimes multiple times a day. And the more things change, the more they break. It's like playing whack-a-mole. You know, you think you're fixing some issue and are releasing some new feature that everybody's got to have, but inadvertently, you break something else. It's a never-ending process, and it's what I always say. It's like, if you want something to be really stable, the thing you got to do is like stop changing it, right? I was at I'm in the Kansas City area, right? And a lot of people may not realize this, but there's like all the Minuteman silos are here. So it's where the government put all the giant nuclear missiles underground that could fire at any moment. And some of them are no longer used, but there are some, I think, like up in Montana are still active. But those things still run software from like the 1950s, and they're not connected to the internet. Like, the software is like the most stable software in the world because it's never been changed, right? Like, if you want software that really works, that's what you have to do. But nobody does that, right? They want a new feature. They want a new this, a new that. And that's what causes it also to break all the time.
Well, that's interesting. That's so counterintuitive to then, you know, from what I thought. I was reading Elon Musk's book over the summer and listening to him talk about the software that they were using in their rockets. And I'm going like, wow, this stuff is so outdated. Like, so my thought was exactly the opposite of what you're saying. It's like, why don't they have the new stuff? And that's what they were building. But wow. Okay. Well,
if it works, you know, you don't want to break it, right? Like, think about the self-driving cars these days. You know, what happens when they introduce a bug into the software for self-driving cars?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I love driving, so I don't think I'll be comfortable sitting back letting a machine drive me.
Yeah, I mean, like with Tesla, they're trying to figure out how to land the rockets, right? After they use the rockets, they have to come back down and land. Yep. And it's a lot of trial and error of tweaking the software and hoping the next time it works, either that or it blows up.
I mean, maybe that's the question we need to ask when we're buying software. It's like, how often do you guys update your software? If they say, we update it every day, then that's probably not the tool or application for me.
Well, it's not necessarily. It depends on the practices of the team and how good a job they do of testing things and quality. And those are a lot of things that, you know, Stackify is trying to help with. We're trying to help developers ship code faster because they have, you know, more confidence in the fact that their software works, that they've tested it, they've found bugs, they found that kind of stuff because our software helps. And once they release, they do the release, they do the deployment, they, you know, we're kind of their eyes and ears to find the problems quickly, hopefully before, you know, all their customers find it. You know, so having those kinds of tools and best practices in place help a lot. And companies can do it. They can move fast and do that. But they've got to have the right kind of practices in place, or otherwise they're just kind of shooting from the hip and who knows what's going to happen.
Well, I know it'll happen. I've been involved in launches where we haven't tested everything. It doesn't always go well.
No, oh, yeah, absolutely.
So where is the best place for people to find you?
You can definitely find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter, MattWatson81 on Twitter. But you can definitely find me on LinkedIn and connect. If anybody has any questions, be glad to try and help them out.
And then I was reading through your blog. You're right, there's a ton of content on there. So if you want to see what Matt's doing in terms of content and content marketing, there's a good some good examples of how he's posting, how much content's there, and how it's all laid out.
Yeah, it's at stackify.com.
Excellent. Who's one guest I have to have on the podcast?
Ooh. You know, I'm sure you've heard this name before, but I'm always kind of a fan of Neil Patel for some reason.
Yes. Yeah, he's an awesome guy. And of course, that would make sense with your background in SEO.
So I love somebody does a great job of blogging. I love his kind of daily updates of stuff. Always little interesting nuggets to read about.
Well, when I read his stuff, I mean, I'm both excited and a little disappointed because I look at how much content he produces and how he sets it up and how he interlinks. And it's almost frightening the machine that he's built there to do that.
Yeah, it is. It is crazy. Yes.
Well, hey, thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate you taking the time today. Thanks for sharing with our audience. Thanks for being open and candid about your previous businesses and some of the challenges. We've got people that are, you know, at various stages of business development that listen to the podcast, and there's some great tips and information there.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me.
So thanks very much, listeners, for tuning in. As usual, we'll make sure that we transcribe all the show notes and all the details for this episode will be online within a few days. And then Matt's information, all the links to his own podcast and his blog and his LinkedIn and social media will be there. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next episode.